podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Preview show.
And welcome back to 1874. It's time for a preview show as Villa travel to the Emirates on Sunday to take on Arsenal, who are really deep in the title race. This show is sponsored by Luke Roper. If you want to get yourself 20% off everything that Luke have to offer, then if you use the code TVV20, you will get the 20% off. And they've got some lovely stuff out at the moment. Villa fan and famous cricketer Chris Wokes has just bought out a range. I think the code works on that as well. Probably should have asked before I brought that up on a show, but never mind. Right then, little disclaimer before we start. I'm going to have to be like Unai Emery on this show. I've got to give Jacob very specific instructions, and if he doesn't follow the instructions, he's going to be in trouble and he won't play in the next game. He's come on today with headphones that have decided to give up the ghost just as we're about to come on, so he was a little quiet. I know we've had audio issues in the past. There's a pecking order here of blame. We blame Jacob, we could blame Lee, we could blame Adam. Basically, I'm blameless in all this. So if you see Jacob move his microphone away from his mouth when he's talking or moving his head at all, get on him in the comments and have a go at him, because he's been given specific Unai Emery instructions to stay in his zone, stay in his space. Right then, Jacob, after that really long-winded intro, how are you?
I'm good. Apologies for not only today, but also the last week. I've been a bit of a diva in terms of my whereabouts, my diary. You've had to cancel a few times. So, yeah, apologies. But, yeah, I feel good, actually. It's I was up till about three last night working on
the office. You look like someone who was up till three, to be honest.
I appreciate it, as always, Dan. But, yeah, actually, I feel okay, actually. Not too bad.
And you were at the game last night. I, of course, if anyone doesn't know, missed the game because I stupidly said I'd change my TalkSport day, thinking, I can't be doing anything on a Thursday, forgetting that Villa were playing on a Thursday. And then by the time I realised, it was too late for me to change it back. And I didn't want to be a diva to talk sports. So, yeah, I missed the game last night, but I did end up watching the whole thing. I got back in time to watch it on telly. We won, you know, which is brilliant. First leg, you know, quarter final at Villa Park. First one for 26 years. Jacob, you can't ask for more than a win. But I do have I think there'll be a tinge of regret in that Villa dressing room and from Unai Emery, because the way the game ended, the whole landscape of the tie feels to me like it's changed. I thought Lille would be tough opposition. They were tough opposition. You know, over the last decade, they've been in Europe a fair bit. Villa obviously have been in the European wilderness. So it was always going to be a tough game. But them just getting that one goal, it feels like that's changed the complexion of the tie. And I honestly think next week in France is going to be so, so hard.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, after a win, usually you either get 3 points or progression into a next round of a cup, where because it's a two-legged game, you don't really get any reward apart from a one-goal lead to France. And as you say, Lille are good. You know, they're a good, composed, confident side, good on the ball, great manager, progressive manager. And it's going to be an atmosphere like all the other games in Europe have been, where it's going to be intimidating, and it's going to be difficult for Villa to control it. I thought the 60th minute was probably the key moment. Even at the time, I thought it. John McGinn scores that second goal, whole end was bouncing. And yet, the difficulty and the struggle was Villa couldn't punish Lille. If they scored a third, perhaps that would have been, you know, tie over. But the fact they allowed Lille back into it, and you're right, as players walked off, although on paper they won the game, it still felt like, oof, we've left ourselves, you know, with a lot to do in the job to get into the semi-finals next week.
Yeah, I bumped into Gabby just before I was going on yesterday, and I had a little chat with him, and he said to me, like, with the first leg being at home, it always feels difficult to gauge whether it's a good result. You know, if you draw, if you win by one goal or whatever, it's difficult to gauge whether it's a good result or not, because you've still got the second leg to play away from home. There's no doubting that I think we'd prefer the games to have been the other way around. You know, if you go to Lille, you know, you draw, you know what you've got to do. I mean, you know what you've got to do anyway. You know, Villa can keep it down to a draw in the next game. That they'll obviously progress through, which is a positive. But at the moment, the problem is that I can't see us keeping a clean sheet. That just doesn't seem to be something that's on our radar at the moment. We'll do anything we can to not keep a clean sheet. And I was saying to Lee before I came on, whilst I was waiting for you, I didn't need to throw you under the bus. I was waiting for you, but I did anyway. the thing that's annoying me about Villa, and there are very few things that annoy me about Villa under Unai Emery, and they've been brilliant all season. And I feel whenever I have a criticism, I almost feel bad because I have to do it because otherwise podcasts would be really, really boring. But I'm so, so pleased and so proud of what they've all done this season. So, and I always feel like I've got no right to ask Unai Emery questions about anything, but I'm going to do it anyway. We don't seem to be learning lessons at the moment. So the Brentford game, we concede again. Goals all coming from the same side, crosses, set pieces, looking a bit all over the place. We don't learn lessons. The same again happened last night. You know, they had a goal disallowed, very, you know, it was a minor offside, wasn't it? We have a scare from a corner near post. We get away with it. Great save from Martinez.
Yeah.
We don't learn lessons because in the next corner on the other side, near post, goal.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the thing I'm finding frustrating about this team at the moment. It's not so much that they're conceding goals, you know, because we score most weeks. It's that we don't learn lessons when we get away with something or, you know, something happens. That's the bit that's frustrating me with this Villa side at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I asked Pau Torres on Wednesday about Villa's growing vulnerability to defending crosses. And you saw the Brentford game, it all came through the same side. Perhaps during that game, there could have been in-game tweaks. Maybe, you know, the space between Konsa and Leon Bailey was big, and that's where Reguilón kept getting the success. And if you look at Lille's disallowed goal yesterday, it was a back post cross from the other side, but it still ended up in the space between Konsa and Bailey too. So there's, you know, themes, emerging trends, I guess, defensively that are of course for concern. But, you know, would it be too harsh on Villa regarding the goal as such? Because Lille did exactly the same before Ollie Watkins' goal, the corner before that.
Yeah, fair.
Villa made the same movement, and it was Watkins who had the shot, didn't he? That went straight at the keeper. So it probably does take a while for teams and coaches to adjust. Lille adjusted after Watkins' goal, and I'm sure Villa would have adjusted after Lille's goal. But, you know, you can look at all the data you want, and you can play the data in how you want it to do too. I know Villa, you know, like to say that they're quite strong on set plays and they've got the data to show it, but Optostats Premier League show that they've conceded the third most in the Premier League from set plays, but only behind Burnley, Sheffield United, joint level of Luton. So that's all the relegate teams in the relegation zones. And, you know, at this point in the season where energy levels are low, when it's a little bit stodgy games, set plays are increasingly important. And the fact that Villa look a little bit weak in those areas means that other teams are going to just try and exploit it even more. And the bad news for Villa is that they're going to Arsenal, I'm sure we'll get onto it, who have scored the most set plays and they're deadly from them.
I mean, you are right. We will get onto it because this is a preview show for Arsenal against Aston Villa. So we are going to have to talk about Arsenal at some point in the show. I've thought over the last couple of games now that, you know, Konsa at right back, it obviously his best position is centre back, but something doesn't look quite right there. You just mentioned the distance between him and Leon Bailey. And I'm not digging Diego Carlos out at all. I think he's in the team to be the man to win the first contacts. I'm not sure that that's actually happening at the moment, really. I can't say that I remember him clearing, you know, corners or anything like that in a way that perhaps Tyrone Mings would, but that's not me digging Carlos out, just the observation. That's why I think he's in the team. We haven't got a right back. Cash isn't there, you know, so Konsa is going to have to play right back anyway. But I'm looking at Konsa's game and thinking he's looking increasingly uncomfortable at right back, whereas, you know, when we were beating Man City and Arsenal before Christmas, I did not think that at all. I don't know whether he's wary of Carlos next to him and he's maybe over-covering a little bit, getting maybe too close to Carlos, which is making him a bit slower to come out and, you know, when he needs to be a traditional right-back, get out and stop crosses and do the things that a traditional right-back would do. But there's something not quite right within that setup at the moment, is there?
No, and, you know, every player goes through a dip in form in the season.
Yeah, of course.
This is probably, you know, Ezri Konsa right now. I think the issue is he hasn't got Matty Cash, so there's certain games where it will call for Konsa to be at right back, although he makes no secret that he doesn't really like playing there. Sometimes you need like a third centre back, you know, in probably, you know, games that are a bit more physical where you're not expecting that, you know, much, you know, attacking threat from that right back. That's fine. But the fact is he's having to play every game now. So ordinarily, I imagine Matty Cash probably would have played against Brentford. And there was a few times where Leon Bailey were cut inside and he was looking, you know, against Brentford's low block in the first half, we're looking for Konsa to be on the outside of him, overlapping, and Konsa was reluctant to. You know, this is not it doesn't come naturally to Konsa. He's throughout his, you know, I've been doing a piece for however long on his background, and throughout the academy, he's always played.
God, you told me about that ages ago. He's still doing it.
Yeah, it's been pushed back for other reasons, but he played essentially centre back and centre midfield. So he's always been in central areas of the pitch. So him getting shunted out to the right is something that he's not entirely comfortable with. And you know, playing next to Diego Carlos, I think Diego Carlos obviously has his strengths, but I don't right now. Maybe I'm being harsh. I don't trust him to be a consistent defender for 90 minutes. I think he makes great blocks sometimes, tackles. You know, the whole end will shout Diego in certain scenarios, but then it'll go to sleep and it'll let someone run off the back of him, and ultimately Villa are getting punished from that as well.
Yeah, we've got James Lungley in the comments saying, "Why bring Kessler Hayden back and not give him minutes?" Yeah. I don't think he was ever brought back to play per se. I think he was brought back as a, I don't want to say emergency option because that sounds harsh, but you know, I don't think he would trust him in a Premier League game, for example. Although he was going to bring him on the other week against Brentford, and then he changed his mind. Danny Hoxton says, anyone else got a real horrible feeling that fifth place is not going to be a Champions League spot? It was a horrid night for the old coefficient last night, wasn't it? Liverpool getting blown away at Anfield to Atalanta, and you know, that actually works into the point I was trying to make about Lille. You know, these teams in the continent, they're no mugs. Atalanta have been in the Champions League. They've got some good players. You know, they're quite capable of turning up at Liverpool and winning and managing a two-leg tie well. And that's how I feel against Lille. Although, I will say, I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that Liverpool get back into that tie, because right, they've, you know, done that kind of thing before, haven't they? I know it's the second legs away from home, but Liverpool have done that kind of thing before. I'd rather be a Phil than a Justin, says that we should throw the game and keep the big guns fresh for Lille. I don't think Villa are in a position to be throwing any game at the moment. But obviously, we've had the Manchester City game recently where he didn't throw it, but he made probably more changes than we thought he would, and kind of it did feel like it was a bit of writing off the game, if we're all to be honest. Do you think he'll do similar on Sunday? Because I don't think we can really afford to do that.
No, he won't. And that's the reason why Villa and Unai Emery and his close aides are extremely unhappy about the scheduling, really, because Lille have got 7 days between games.
Yeah.
Arsenal is on Sunday, and Emery knows that the importance of the fixture, playing against his old team, actually stokes a different fire in him as well. It has ever since he left Arsenal. He really gives up for those games. So he's not going to make, I very much doubt he'll make the type of changes he did at the Etihad. But it's a big game. And right now, I should think, even if you've seen when Ollie Watkins has been recovering from hamstring injuries, if these guys are available, they'll play. I think from now to the end of the season, Emery will just pick his strongest team. You know, it could have easily happened yesterday where Alex Moreno started the game. You know, usually they rotate Luka Dean and Moreno, but Emery's thinking, Luka Dean's my first choice left back. He's my best left back at the moment. I need to play him. And that was, there was no thought of Sunday's game either, when you probably imagine Luka Dean would be a safer bet marking Bukayo Saka than Moreno right now. So, yeah, I think there won't be too much rotation, and he certainly might throw the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm massively looking forward to Sunday. When we played Arsenal early on in the season, we were on it. We were playing with penetration, precision. The weight of pass was perfect. That goal we scored was one of my favourite goals this season, because just every movement, every pass, every rotation was just absolutely spot on, and it accumulated with McGinn putting the ball in the swivelling and putting the ball in the back of the net. Villa felt on it at that point, and maybe Arsenal, I think they might have lost a few games or lost a game around the time that we played them. Might have just lost to Fulham, actually, at the time. You know, it felt like a decent time to play them, and we were at probably the peak of our abilities at that point. I don't feel like that with Villa at the moment. And again, I caveat that by saying how proud I am of the manager, the players, the coaches, everyone this season. They've all been brilliant. But it does feel like we're slightly running out of gas, whereas it feels like at the moment, Arsenal are doing a little bit like what we were doing at the start of the season, a little bit what Villa did at the back end of last season. You feel like they'll keep a clean sheet week in, week out. They went to Brighton last week, tough place to play, and kept one. They're scoring goals. Their big players are on form. I even think their result against Bayern was a good result. You know, in years gone by, I think they'd have gone under, but they got themselves back and drew 2-2. They've got a fully fit squad as well. You know, they could bring players in. Partey's come back recently. You know, Trossard whether he starts, whether he comes on as a sub, just always seems to put the ball in the back of the net. So Arsenal feel at the moment like they're at the peak of their powers and we don't. So it's not a game I'm looking forward to, in all honesty.
No, in other seasons, I'd probably say, you know what, Villa might have some space stylistically, you know, quite conducive to breaking on transition if they want to sit a bit deeper with Watkins, Diaby, Bailey. But this Arsenal team just looks so controlled at the moment. And it's probably how Emery wants Villa to be, really, in throughout the season, where they just stay nice and controlled. They're very efficient with their energy levels. They never have to suffer the serendipity of, you know, emotions and getting into games. You know, last year they were, you know, winning in the 98th minute or whatever against Bournemouth, you know, and that took a lot out of them emotionally. But now, as you say, they went to Brighton the other day and it was controlled, and, you know, emotionally they're actually saving energy now. So it's difficult for Villa, and they're, you know, their centre-back pairing is the best.
Oh, do you think that's the best centre-back pairing in the world at the moment? I don't see another one.
No, I probably have to say so, because if you look at the data, it's beyond anything else, you know, that a Premier League side produces. The only team that has come close recently is when Guardiola moved to that four centre-back system towards the end of last season. And that's the issue for Villa. You can't really prey on one of their centre-backs. You can't say, like, let's counter and get the centre-backs 1v1 on transition, because they're so good. They're so good at covering large spaces. It's going to be an issue. And Villa will have to suffer, and they'll have to, if they're going to win the game, it's going to take a lot out of them. And, you know, that's, they have to be prepared for that. Whether they can do that physically is another task.
That's the thing with Arsenal now, isn't it? You know, a criticism that you could probably level at Villa for 5-6 years now, probably even more, is that they're not the most physically imposing side.
Yeah.
Arteta's done a lot of great things at Arsenal. He's built a lot of brilliant things at Arsenal, but they are no pushovers anymore. You kind of look at every aspect of a good team. A bit like we used to look at Man City. I mean, I still do look at Man City like that, in fairness, but they're physical specimens in there now. You know, Rice, Gabriel, Havertz is a big guy. Saliba is absolutely brilliant. Even Ben White at right back, he must be 6 foot plus as well. I mean, the goalkeeper is probably one of the smallest players in that Arsenal side, in fairness. You know, they're just a really, really good team, but they can do both. You know, they can play you off the park a bit, like the Arsenal of old, actually. They're the Invincibles team. But they've also got that physicality, pace, power. They've just got everything, haven't they, Arsenal, at the moment? They're a brilliant side. And I think, if you know, if they won the league, I don't think I want a different team to win the league, because I think it's good for the Premier League. Whether it be Arsenal or Liverpool, you know, I think if either of them win the league, everyone has to take their hat off to him. Arteta's turnaround there has been absolutely brilliant. You can't knock what he's done. They stuck with the process. Arsenal backed him. They finished eighth. He didn't lose his job. They've just been brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Arteta in terms of how he carries himself and his remarks after games when they lose. But yeah, you can't deny that the job they've done in the last 3 to 4 years, it's been incremental progress, hasn't it? And it's funny when you look at Arteta and Guardiola, when they cancelled each other out a few weeks ago, you know, you associate them with high possession, you know, high press, dominance. But yet, I think in that game, there's nine centre-backs or something, nine defenders overall with both teams, which is ridiculous. And it shows they can do the dirty side of the game. They can be quite pragmatic at times, but they do it through control of games. They don't do it through longer balls, winning 50-50s. They do it by suffocating opponents, winning set plays, scoring from set plays, and they've got a really physical, dominant team. And if you look at Villa, where they are now, with energy levels maybe flagging, understandably flagging, and a vulnerability from set plays, then it doesn't have the hallmarks of a very you know, inviting game for Villa fans going up to the Emirates on Sunday.
You know, I've spoke about all the power. Apologies for that noise, if anyone can actually hear that. You know, I've just moved, as everyone knows. I can tell by my empty background. There's people doing something in the garden, and I'm not a guy who's great with DIY and building and things like that. They're using a machine that's loud. That machine is loud. So apologies if that's getting picked up at the moment. That's the perils of being live. Everything seems to be against us on this channel when trying to put out a show. Probably should stop doing them live at this point. But Jacob, can you still hear me? That would be
I can hear you. All good. Very good.
Can you hear that noise? Can you hear that loud noise when it comes on?
Yeah, I could.
I have blocked out. I mean, I'm very technical, as you know. I have blocked out the background noise. I've suppressed it, so people should hopefully not as bad as it sounds to me, but undoubtedly it'll put me off when I'm talking. I wanted to focus on one play, and I've just talked about all the physicality. I wanted to actually focus on Arsenal for Ødegaard. What a good player he is. We live in a time where Manchester City just have some ridiculous midfielders such as De Bruyne and Foden, lovely footballers to watch. And I think, yeah, everyone talks about De Bruyne, undoubtedly one of the best Premier League midfielders ever when he retires or when he leaves the Premier League. I think the discussion will be, was he the best ever to play in the Premier League in midfield, which, you know, against some of the players that he'd be up against in that conversation, I think he's right in the mix. But because we live in the time where we've got Kevin De Bruyne, I actually think people don't realise how good Ødegaard is. He's one of my favourite players to watch. He's just such a silky, lovely footballer. He's a player that always gets weight of pass right. I mean, I think people must be sick of hearing me say weight of pass, but I love players that always get the weight of pass right. And he's one of them. He's so intricate in build-up play, the way he links with the front players, he gets beyond, he sits back at the right time to pop off shots when he needs to, he's capable of playing clever through balls. You know, this is a brilliant, brilliant footballer. And actually, for all the good that Villa have in the team, and I love our team, probably don't have a kind of number 10. I know he doesn't play as a number 10, but, you know, Villa don't really have that type of player. That the closest they've probably got to that is Buendia, who hasn't been able to play all season. But in, you know, if the game does become tight, which I don't think it will, in fairness, you know, someone like Ødegaard to unlock the door is critical. And he'd be up there for player of the year as well.
Yeah, definitely. Emery prefers those ball-carrying, quite physical number 10s, you know, the guys that are quite athletic, that are quite, you know, more runners than the guys that can weave in and out of pockets, like Ødegaard. I think he's a wonderful player. Like you say, there was a few early in the season, and watching him last year, where I felt at times he could be a little bit one-dimensional. He was always the right-sided number 8, would always cut onto his left, cross-field balls. But now he's really started to take up different positions. I, you know, saw it in the last 16. Against Porto, he was coming over to the left channel. He played that lovely through ball to Trossard as well. He, as you say, yeah, you're perfect. Spot on when you say about the weight of pass. I think his slide passes, his disguise passes against low blocks are just absolutely beautiful. And, you know, Villa are going to probably, I don't want to tempt fate, but they're probably going to have to camp in their final third at times. But Arsenal are going to sustain attacks. And the worry is Ødegaard has that capability to, excuse the cliche, of unlocking the door, picking the door. He's exceptional at finding those guys, especially the wingers that come from in to out, the overlapping fullbacks as well. And also, you know, Arsenal, like Villa, are specials at cutback crosses, and Ødegaard gets a fair share of those too. So yeah, he's a worry. But if I was Unai Emery, and I'm not, thankfully for Villa fans, I'd probably get John McGinn to try and do a job on him and follow him when Arsenal off the ball.
Trouble is with that, it's a great plan. I agree with you. But McGinn probably needs to play as the deepest Villa midfielder. So, and he's got going to have other things on his mind in that position, because I think, you know, it's going to have to be McGinn and Tielemans for this one, because Douglas Luiz obviously managed to go 96 minutes without getting a yellow card last week, and then decided in the last minute, I'll just try and make a tackle. And I didn't think it was bad, but it went wrong, and he got that booking, and I wish to God he hadn't decided to do that, Douglas Luiz. So first choice central midfield's gone for Villa for the next couple of weeks. Kamara and Luiz. So it's probably going to be McGinn and Tielemans. I love Tielemans. Tielemans genuinely is one of my favourite players. I love watching him. You know, I keep going on about wide pass. Some of the passes Tielemans make, the through balls, are absolutely incredible. And I think his mobility's got better as the season's gone on, actually. But the way Arsenal move around, I am a little bit concerned about that midfield.
Yeah, I'd probably go for Timo Rabin. I mean, now I think if there's a blueprint, what he did in the first half against Man City, I thought he was really good in breaking up play.
That's fair.
And, you know, I think he's probably got better legs than Tielemans in covering in deeper positions. And when you're having to mark, you know, Rice, Havertz, Ødegaard, either side of you, I think you probably would rather him. And then, you know, Tielemans, you talk about wetter pass. You saw it when he came on at the away to Tottenham in the second half when he played in Watkins and played in Bailey a few times. I'd prefer him in a more attacking area, especially in these type of games where he can connect the thirds together. So I'd probably play him further forward and go for a Robin him in there, who's probably a bit more of a specialist than McGinn or Tielemans in the deeper roles, and he's got that athleticism too. And in that type of game where he's probably not going to have the ball much, he's got a pretty one-minded job, and that's just to dispossess Arsenal's number 8 and to keep it tight.
So you're saying you go McGinn, Robinham, and then Tielemans playing off Watkins for this one?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether you listened to the preview last week before Brentford. You probably haven't done because you're really, really busy. But I said something in that preview. I'm interested to see if you agree with me. I think you do by actually what you've just said. So in the game against Brentford at home, where they're going to sit back, I think having Tielemans as a deeper midfielder helps. But then in a game like this, you probably want him and McGinn to swap and have Tielemans as that number 10, because if he's going to be unlocking someone, he's not going to unlock a team like Arsenal from deep.
No, exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You saw Tielemans for Morgan Rodgers' goal. We threaded that pass into him when Brentford were in a lowish block. And you're right, because McGinn in deeper positions, a bit like what I said about Robben, and he's got better mobility, so he can get around the pitch, shuffle side to side in that double pivot. And, you know, in games where Arsenal, Spurs, when there's more space in between the lines on the counter, Tielemans can be in those number 10 areas to play those balls into Watkins or Diaby or Bailey. I think it'd be interesting to see if he goes for Diaby. I probably would. I think he could potentially be threatening.
Where? Because if he does that, if he does what we've just said, there's nowhere for Diaby, is there?
Diaby played on the right, didn't he, against Man City. I wonder whether you...
You're saying over Baylor?
Yeah, I wonder whether you cheat with Diaby, because against City, he was not fully tracking down that side defensively. And you look at Arsenal's left-back, probably Zinchenko or Kirill, they're not the most overlapping. They tend to hold the position, tend to tuck in, don't they? So it'll probably go Konsek and will have to be 1v1 or whoever gets Martinelli or Trossard or whatever. So I probably would go Diaby in this game, freshen up a little bit. And I think, I think he can offer something.
I just hurt myself under the desk because I haven't sorted my room out yet. And this is going to be rubbish for audio listeners. I've got like a boot and they have just been studded by Christian Benteke's boot.
I did wonder why you looked in pain whilst I was talking.
I don't put shin pads on to do a podcast. And these Benteke's boot has just shinned me. I'm trying to see what size it is. There's actually blood or something in this boot as well. He obviously didn't wash it before I got hold of this boot. I can't say what size it is, but it's bloody massive. There's got to be at least a 12 there. But yeah, just got studied by Christian Benteke's boot under my desk as I was shuffling. That hurt. Got a bruise on my shin. So yeah, apologies to audio listeners. You won't have seen, but I have just lifted a Christian Benteke boat that's more like a canoe that's just smashed into my shin under the desk. Captain K agrees with me. I think I played football with Captain K. I'm sure that's the same Captain K at Villa Park in May. He says, "Weight of pass is such an underrated skill by fans. Jack is the master of that, I agree. But Ødegaard is also quality." I mean, if it is the same Captain K, he'll know from playing with me that day. Weight of pass from centre-back every time. Absolutely unbelievable. Pinging the ball around Villa Park, I was. I made a highlight reel and put it on Instagram. I did about three good things all game. And it made me look like I was the best ball-playing centre-back.
You used to go over the top of it, like some sort of YouTube montage.
I mean, you go on my Instagram, it's there. I made one like goal-saving block and about three good passes, all in the rail. Makes me look like the most accomplished centre-back Villa Park's ever seen. Have we got anything left to cover? Probably not. There was someone who asked about going to Emery's three centre-backs formation like we did against Tottenham. I'd imagine we're not going to do that again. I don't think we've got three centre-backs. No one to play. No one to play right wing. I suppose Kane, Kessler, Hayden could play, but yeah.
Chambers is back.
Yeah, well, Chambers would have to play in that back three. You would imagine, wouldn't you? Eugent Singh says Villa will win on Sunday. I'm betting my house on it. So Eugent Singh is probably going to be homeless by the time that me and Gregory convene on Monday to do a show. Captain K also says, "I also loaned you my spare shin pad. Seems like you still haven't bought your own." I did forget my shin pads that day as well at Villa Park. Right, I can't even read that. I'm not sure I've read that right. Says, "Mark this, Arsenal will thrash Villa." I don't think Villa will be in for a thrashing, but I could envisage a couple of Arsenal goals and an Arsenal clean sheet, if I'm being completely honest. I don't often predict us to lose, but on the Who Scored podcast that I do, I did predict us to lose 2-0 this weekend. But yeah, it's a tough game, isn't it, Jacob? There's no dancing around it. This is not an ideal game. The only thing a positive I can come up with is that But that Arsenal, although they've got to win every game to win the league, which they will want to do, they will have an eye on the Bayern Munich games. It's not as if we're playing a team who've got a free week or have just had a free week. they've had a lot taken out of them. They've got a lot to come in the Champions League as well. But the bonus is Villa haven't travelled. So they've got the travelling to come. That will be more of an effect the week after. So they're the kind of positives I can come up with there.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, Bayern Munich game is early than Villa's against Lille. So they might have one eye on that. But I think for Villa, it's just important in the game as long as they can. You know, whether even if Arsenal have 70% possession, if they have a few chances, even if Martinez gets booked for time wasting, it's just important to stay in the game for as long as they can and hope that, you know, whether it's through a creative set play, whether it's through, you know, a really intricate build-up or Captain Chaos and the Maverick twins come on with half an hour to go and they produce
your favourite player.
Honestly, I absolutely adore John Durant.
I know you do.
I think he's wonderful. But yeah, I would love nothing more than him to score at the Emirates, give it the big one and put it all over his Instagram afterwards. But hopefully he won't be driving home either.
Yeah, but I don't know if this is true. I mean, I assume it's true, otherwise you wouldn't have said it. Brad Lynch has just said in the comments that Lille have only lost one in their last 38 home games.
Yeah, it's crazy. And Jonathan David as well is scoring for fun, isn't he, at the moment?
I've got to say, I wasn't impressed with him last night.
No, I
remember people saying, we should sell Watkins and sign Jonathan David. I know one game's not, you can't judge someone on one game, but no.
He's not really an out-and-out nine. He's similar to probably Watkins was before Emery, when he was more of like a forward kind of thing. So I was quite surprised he started out as an out-and-out nine. I think he's a good player in there, especially where he is at the moment. Yeah, I'm sure he'll progress onto better things.
And Al Rao says, are you worried United will catch us?
No. Absolutely no chance.
No, I'm not worried about that at all. That's the last thing on my mind. I'm just worried that we're going to finish fifth and it won't be Champions League. That's my main concern at the moment. Bloody coefficient. Honestly, it was 85% chance or something, wasn't it, before this round of fixtures that he would go to the English team. Suddenly now, what are the chances now? Probably about 15%.
Yeah. The one game really Villa fans probably wanted Liverpool to win as well.
That would have helped. I expected West Ham to get beat by Leverkusen. Yeah. I'm not really that bothered by that. We could do with Arsenal and City going through, really. Could have matched. I don't think the City matter as much. Arsenal, I don't know. Look, I did read a big piece on the coefficients on The Athletic yesterday as well, and I still don't understand. So that doesn't say much for my brain power. Right then, let's go. Well done, Jacob, for keeping your mic near your mouth the whole way through the show and not moving your head too much. And thank you for everyone that's tuned in live to watch today's show. If you do go on to listen to it, or if you've taken it in via YouTube, if you could do all the things that help us, like, register, that's not right, subscribe, like, comment. Let's try and hit 500 likes for this video on YouTube. And yeah, if you do all the things I've just mentioned, leave us a nice review on audio platforms as well. All these things help the channel. I'll be back on Monday with Greg, I believe, now he's back in the UK to do a show around the Arsenal game. Fingers crossed it'll be a positive one. Thanks to Lee for producing, and yeah, have a great weekend before the Villa game. I'd advise, enjoy your Friday and Saturday nights, I would say, because when you get the work dreads on Sunday and after Villa have played Arsenal, it might not be an enjoyable Sunday. But as ever, only one thing left to say, up the Villa.
Podcast Network.